Oh, say can see.
If you're an American and you're professing to be a Christian, well, of course, as American citizens, what we want is accountable leadership. Why don't we throw in a constitution so they know what's in that? Get engaged in the political process.
Honest.
You, my friend, are part of the problem and not the solution.
Compassionate.
The church needs to rise. Rise.
Monica Matthews Show.
Welcome back to the Monica Matthews Show, Life, Love, and Liberty. Maybe changing the name of my show here soon. Not sure. Lots of things are changing. It's spring. Lots of pollinating going on. Lots of rebirth. Lots of things dying off, too, which is good. And I think some people are coming to the realization of just how burnt out they are. Welcome to episode 3 of burnout. We've talked about what is it? What is burnout? What are the stages of burnout? If you missed the first 2 episodes, I highly encourage you to go back and listen, beginning with episode 1. It will bless you, as we've heard from many people. They are blessed by the message because most people are so embroiled with all things politics, geopolitics, the election cycle, what's coming next. This week it was the eclipse, and magically we're all still here. I'm assuming you're not listening. I'm not broadcasting from Mars, and as far as I know, maybe from Venus, apparently, but not from Mars. And some of you, may be on Mars, but I think most of us are still here on this planet, in this galaxy, and welcome back. Yeah, it's been an interesting 3 weeks for me. I've been very candid. Well, now a little bit longer, actually. I think I'm on a month, but I'm relatively back on Twitter, but not in the same capacity. So there needed to be a massive shift. I tweeted to my audience yesterday, apologizing for the possibility of having discouraged people. And or led them, in a way that was less than life-giving, if you will. That is never my heart, but it's important to recognize when you are on the road to burnout yourself, that your cup, whenever it's not running over, that dried up, crusty cup ends up, scattering onto others. And so it was really important for me to just take responsibility for my own crappy attitudes, and really getting caught up in the fray, which is a place I try to avoid, at all costs, to be honest with you, so I can maintain a 50,000 foot view. But I am human, and the Lord was gracious in reminding me of my humanity and that I was not focused on the things that are important to not only my soul, but the souls of others, right? And that's my primary lane. You have your primary lane, I'm sure. And my special guest has certainly shared in my primary lane of caring for the souls of others. And with me today, I have a special guest again, retired Major Chris Cairns is back with us this week. And we're going to talk about, in this episode 3, mitigation of burnout. Are you guys aware that burnout is an estimated cost to the healthcare system of at least $4.6 billion per year annually? $4.6 billion per year, with the greatest burden attributable to turnover and work hour reductions among primary care physicians. I thought that was interesting. And speaking of primary care physicians, I'm very excited to offer my relationship at my go-to doc with Dr. Saeed Haider and others who are fantastic physicians who he's partnered up with, and giving you a 10% discount on any of your purchases whenever you use the code MonicaLovesHealth, right? Who doesn't love health? And that's mygotodoc.com. You can stock up on your disaster preparedness antibiotic kits, your D-packs, your 6-week backup supplies of your regularly prescribed medications, as well as safe off-label label COVID protocols for prevention and treatment. There's also, telemed possibilities with this particular practice, but these guys have really hunkered down with people who have been vaccine injured, people who are looking for to be able to stock up and supply for their family. In the event of supply chain disruptions, which we know is no longer a conspiracy theory, I'm not suggesting it's a conspiracy, but I'm definitely suggesting it's no longer a theory, that we do in fact have supply chain hiccups. And that's not always because it's conspiratorial. You know, crap happens, right? So make sure that whenever the crap hits the fan, you and your family have what you need. MyGoToDoc.com, 10% discount at Monica Loves Health. Thank you. And another thing people worry about constantly is their money, right? I'm taking a class right now. I want to tell you about it. I'm very excited. I'm not partnered with them, so I'm not selling the class, although I'd love to because it's so fantastic. But it's a class called Wealth with God. It's an entire system, and it is championed by Pastor Jim Baker, not that Jim Baker, not the Tammy Faye, God rest her soul, and Jim Baker, but a young, awesome, on fire for all things God, kingdom, very positive, upbeat, honest, sober, earnest. All doctrine is very sound. Wealthwithgod.com. I'm thoroughly enjoying this class and learning how to be a better steward, right, of not only my finances and no longer having mammon run me, right, but me stewarding my money, my financial blessings, so that I can be a blessing to others. Amen. And so one of the other things that leads to burnout is not only, you know, worrying about money, worrying about what's going to happen in the election, worry, when Jesus tells us not to worry. Like how many times, we'll ask Chris in just a minute, how many times did Jesus say not to fear, not to worry, right? Plenty. And here we see that it costs the country, it's costing you $4.6 billion annually, because those costs, as you know, trickle down. They just do. They trickle down. They never trickle up, right? But they do trickle down to the consumer of whatever it is we're consuming. And so learning how to steward your time, your relationships, your emotions, your health, your wealth, all of those things is just a part of, I believe, God's plan for us to live an abundant life. So learning about all of that. But for those of you who are still holding out hope that your 401k is going to be there a year from now, or at least not completely mangled as it is on the way down, as I've heard from many of my audience members, up to 45% actually some of you have lost in your portfolios. I'm going to encourage you again, MonicaProtectsWithGold.com. Metals, intrinsic value, we know it is the I will call it, standing in my lane, I will call it the monetary system of choice for our heavenly king, right? So gold, silver, things that are in the earth that have intrinsic value. You can also see that geopolitically, some of your world leaders understand the value of gold, including our own government. Don't let them fool you, even though we don't no longer use the gold value to back our worth nothing dollars. So do yourself a favor and steward your what's left of your savings in your retirement, particularly if you're about 10 years out from retirement. Very important. MonicaProtectsWithGold.com. Without further ado, Mr. Retired Major Chris Cairns. I always want to call you Dr. Cairns. Aren't you working on that though? See, I think that's like it's a foretelling that it's going to happen. You're actually going to knock that out.
Yeah, I think you're being prophetic.
I know I am.
But it could be like a Daniel prophecy where it has nothing to do with his particular lifetime. maybe my resurrected body is going to be a doctor.
Well, yeah. Well, I won't do the whole stolen quote academic valor thing. But I do. I always want to call you Dr. Chris Cairns. So I'm telling you, I think it's there for you. But welcome back. We are on episode 3, and we're talking about mitigation. Can you believe it cost $4.6 billion to the American economy for burnout?
Oh, I think that's probably low. Because, as you mentioned, the turnover in companies of people who just get fed up by the commodification culture of their company, and all of that money that's been invested goes out the back door. Same with the Army. People are leaving the Army. They're just like, it's not worth it anymore because I'm just being used up and spit out. Now, we all sign up for that in combat. Like, we're ready to go forward and expend ourselves for the great cause of American liberty and the defense of innocence. But But for it to be happening in a training environment, in a garrison training environment, or in a TRADOC train, you know, classroom environment, like, it's nonsense for our cadre to be working 7 days a week and no breaks. And then we send them to their next job completely frazzled and unable to cope without, you know, starting down the road of dangerous methods of coping. So I told my first commander, I was like, sir, I know where your SIRs are coming from, serious incident reports, where soldiers get into all kinds of crazy trouble. It dropped my jaw. I mean, I'm not a prude. I have a past before Jesus. But these soldiers find all kinds of crazy ways to get into trouble. And I trace that to the root of occupational burnout. You know, people are trying to take the edge off what has become chronic exhaustion from chronic stress. And there's an overlap with PTSD. A lot of people with PTSD also have the symptoms of burnout. And a lot of people with burnout get diagnosed with PTSD, whether they have it or not.
You know, that's interesting. One of the things I'm curious. Okay. What is a primary, if you can list a primary thing that was recurring, amongst the military personnel who you say were struggling with this burnout, you know, to the level where you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you guys are into this kind of stuff or into this mess. What would be the primary thing that is leading someone to burnout that's not deployed? Because I guess for me, whenever I hear from people now, they're like, oh, you know, my nephew, he was just diagnosed with PTSD. I'm like, oh, wow, I didn't realize he was, you know, ever deployed. And they're like, no, you know, he's never been deployed. And I don't mean to make light of things that happen in life that can physically traumatize the brain. Okay, because I realize that happens. I'm not naive to that. Or I hear from gentlemen who have been deployed, but maybe they're guarding, like, you know, a trash bin, and they never left the base. And I'm sure you're still on heightened, you know, awareness and heightened senses of what's happening. But there is a part of me that goes, okay, come on, fellas, like, you were guarding, you know, the trash or the latrine, however you guys get rid of your poop over there. You know, and so there's a part of me that's like, how much of this is real, right? And how much of it, and again, I don't want to diminish anyone's reality. However, I'm also, as you know, a very pragmatic mother, a no-nonsense person at times when it comes to getting to the root of something. I'm like that with myself. So I'm certainly like that with others I minister to. So what is it that leads these men and women, if you could pick one or two primary things that leads them down into the burnout toilet, into these bad decisions?
Yeah, well, I think what soldiers do in the margins of their lives left over by work is what we're talking about. And so the work life is so regimented that they go from one thing to the next, and it can be in the field. If you get things wrong, you can be the person that the commander or the first sergeant blows up at. So you're constantly on edge, trying to do as much as you can to avoid any sort of negative attention. You know, that can create different levels of chronic stress that different constitutions, different people, some can handle, some can't. You know, some thrive under the pressure, the constant pressure of the army, and some break before the pressure has really reached its max level.
Right.
So usually there's a requirement that is more than one single human being's worth. So if you demonstrate competency when you show up to your unit, there's going to be an incompetent person next to you, and that person's job gets scraped on your plate, and you end up carrying more than one load, as we've talked about.
Right.
But then in the margins of your time left over by work, If you're exhausted, you tend not to want to do the kinds of things that refresh your soul. You tend to want to do the kinds of things that take the edge off, like amusements.
Right.
And we talked about that. Amuse means not think.
We didn't know. We didn't really get into that. You and I talked about that offline. Recreation. But we, yeah.
Okay.
Let's go over that.
Well, amusement is amuse, not think. It's a mental checkout. And we need a mental checkout. We need a break from work drama or relationship drama, just a mental checkout. And so, you know, there's nothing wrong with binge watching a series one weekend. But if that's our only go-to, mm-hmm. we aren't recreating. We aren't doing the things that refresh our soul in particular. Mm. And the most healthy recruiters I had in the 2nd Recruiting Brigade were the guys who love to hunt and fish. They're mm-hmm. always getting out on the weekends, refreshing their soul, going fishing, going hunting. You know, they have a life outside of the drama of work.
That's right.
That calms and restores. You know, think of Psalm 23, who is it that leads me, you know, into green pastures mm-hmm. beside still waters mm-hmm. and restores my soul. You know, that's not the Sabbath that soldiers are choosing. They're choosing, you know, it might even be worse, you know, clubbing till 4.
Sure.
When they have to be at PT, physical training, in 2.5 hours.
Ugh, wow.
And they, you know, try to make it. And so we have to teach people, like, okay, your free time is your free time. We can't dictate to you what you're going to do, but we can let you know what the potential consequences can be. And I tried to get the Army's ear for 10 years on the fact that the number one precondition to soldiers choosing a permanent solution to temporary problems, that is suicide,
sure.
Attempt or successful attempt, you know, was often this place of burnout that you and I have both been to, where you just stop caring. Like, you could be an empath.
Right.
And in the height of the surge, we had chaplains who were experiencing compassion fatigue. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are the people we need not to be experiencing compassion fatigue, but they have been so overloaded, so depleted without a break, that they break. And, you know, we need to just understand that in our culture, where we've, instead of rising with the sun and going to bed at the closing of the day, mm-hmm. you know, we burn the midnight oil, we stay up. When we look at how much time we were spending attached to the boob tube and attached now to our devices of various kinds, it's insane the number of hours that we could be spending learning
sure.
a new language, or, you know, devoting ourselves to volunteering in an organization that refreshes us. You know, sometimes what you do in the margins of your life left over by work that refresh your soul could be serving others. It doesn't have to be,
that's right.
You know, something like kayaking down a gorge, which, you know, is the kind of thing that tends to refresh my soul, like
right.
fly fishing. But this is not what people are choosing. They're choosing not to recreate. They're choosing to overeat, drink one too many,
right.
amuse themselves because they're coming home exhausted, and then unwittingly exhausting themselves further by doing things like, you know, sitting there drooling all over themselves, mm-hmm. you know, doom scrolling through Instagram.
Right. Or Twitter. Okay. I don't see a lot of doom stuff on it. Maybe it's because I've positioned my IG account that way, but I am into recipes, things about toddlers, travel. I do have a listing called Tiny Home Porn. Sorry, but I do, because I love tiny homes. So,
well, yeah. I've been watching, like, people lately on YouTube. I've been watching people, like, build cabins.
Yes.
yes, with hand tools and crazy stuff like
right.
that. But I think if you're, you know, I think it's an ADHD thing. Like my daughter, doom scrolling is where you can't stop scrolling.
That's what I had gotten into with X.
Yeah. And so, you know, our souls were not built for the worldwide inanities,
right.
From the whole international community. And so, you know, if you think back to the agrarian society where, you know, people worked hard, but they went to bed, you know, they might sit around the 19th century TV, which was listening to your father read from the Bible.
Right. I'm always reminded of that scene in Pride and Prejudice where that little tiny man is like, I thought I might read a bit of blah, 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 blah. You
right,
know,
right,
it's like
exactly.
2 hours later, he's like, everyone's wishing death upon themselves. Yeah.
Correct. And, you know, each soul has a different way of relaxing, rejuvenating,
right.
refreshing. And so it's something that people have to explore, you know, because you don't really know yourself when you're growing up. You have to kind of find out who you are, what you like, experience some things, and, you know, hopefully not die before you're 18.
Right.
A fentanyl or whatever's coming across our border.
Right.
Our unchecked border. Sorry for that.
You're good. We agree here. Go
yeah,
ahead.
No, I know. I just,
it is life, you know, love, and liberty.
I'm making editorial comments in the midst of.
It's okay.
But, you know, I think our souls were designed for a certain measure of being outside, listening to the wind in
right.
the trees, the natural music of birds singing, the babbling brook.
Right.
And it does have a restorative effect on the soul. And we've sort of divorced ourselves into our cubicles.
That's right.
And our sort of Death Star concrete cities,
right?
Where we're killing the things that would refresh us, and you know, putting a Walmart on it,
right? Or how many of those buildings are now sitting empty? You know, and what'll be interesting. What's interesting is I live in the city of Atlanta, and so there are a lot of little green spaces, right, where they tear a bunch of stuff down, they leave a little green patch, and then they make it all fun and recreational for, you know, for families to come and picnic. And admittedly, what I've started doing since my fast from Twitter or X is I started visiting little parks that are around me that I've just never taken the time to pull into and enjoy.
Yeah.
And took a blanket, took the Hobbit, and went out and just laid under the trees and listened to the wind in red for a little bit and watched couples on the swings and, you know, kids riding their bikes and just really took all of that in. So there are a few areas around me where I can really enjoy that, and I'm in the city. So, you know, the city, now we all know that there are slush funds galore in every city. And ultimately, you know, it will become a holding tank for many things. But there are still ways, even if you live in the city, you know, to carve out that time for your family in those places and spaces and be a part of the planning committee, you know, zoning committees, all of that. All of those things are still within our purview to do. But I want to hit on something. So we were also talking about before we came on the air about pastors and pastoral burnout, chaplaincy, all of that, you know, people just not having anything to give. I think this could also, it's interesting. I was about to say, I think it could apply to your CEO, your CFO, you know, your C-suite in general. However, yeah. I don't think that what I'm about to touch upon really affects the C-suite as much as it does people who are, who others believe are just supposed to lie prostrate, you know, every day and never let their oil lamps run out, always be ready to serve and always, you know, hang from their crosses of Christ because he said so. In the way of pastors, in the way of pastoral care, in that if they take a sabbatical, I think many times There's probably a fear element there that they could be replaced. They're also accused many times by their own congregation. It's almost like the congregation has really taken that scripture to heart, you know, where I'm a slave for Christ. So they take it upon themselves to basically slave drive their pastors into a place of submission where they're not allowed to recreate. They're not allowed to take time off because it's not holy. You know, can you speak to that just a little bit?
Oh, yeah. The pastor chaplain problem is insane. You know, you have one chaplain for 550 people in a unit, and wow, they're all their family members are in your charge as well. And so if that were a church, mm-hmm, you'd have a staff of 20 people. But, you know, you get into a lot of these little churches and, you know, the average size United Methodist or Episcopal or Presbyterian USA, the main lines, the average size is like 75 people and a full-time pastor, a poorly paid musician, and a part-time bookkeeper. And that's average. So if you have 75 people on a Sunday, that means it's probably 150 people in the community. Mm-hmm. And most people would think that is a manageable size, and it is. You know, when it gets to 200 people, you know, 200 or more average Sunday attendance, you're talking about a community of closer to 500, and they tend not to restructure for growth and add staff in healthy ways or schedule a sabbatical 7 years out, 5 to 7 years, in my opinion. And what you want is you want at least one person in your community. If you're a person of faith and you have a faith community, you want at least one person who isn't getting so sucked into the rat race that have no perspective. Mm-hmm. You want one person at least that you're freeing up with your tithes to approach the chaos of this world with the wisdom and strength of having rooted themselves in who God is. And so, you know, when you were doing your introduction, it made me think of peace through strength and Jesus's meekness. The word there, meek, means strength under control. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean what the connotation we have for it now. It's like a war horse that is not running the wagon into a ditch, mm-hmm, but is under control. And so where do we get that strength from? Well, we get that strength from living a Sabbath lifestyle, living in a way that that the other 6 days are lived from the strength that we gain from rejuvenating our depleted resources. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about Sabbath in a legalistic, you know, kind of manner. I'm just talking about just the basic principles of rest. You need to rest your brain from intellectual engagement. Sufficient unto the day are the evil headlines therein. Mm-hmm, like you just mm-hmm. can't handle worldwide bad news.
Right.
You got to turn it off. And then emotional drama. What's emotionally depleting you? It could be a sick family member that you're concerned about. It could be, you know, your child that you're worried about, but you're constantly being emotionally drained, especially if you're a pastor, because you're getting sucked into everybody's drama. And that's what people don't understand about their pastor, is that they relate to him one-on-one, and that's all they see him doing, except for the show on Sundays. But if there's 200 other people, you know, trying to engage five times a week, you know, that's death by a thousand cuts. And so we don't often stop and think about, okay, what bandwidth do I have as one single human being? And what do I need to be doing outside of that bandwidth of work to refresh myself in the margin, to use the margins wisely, daily, weekly, monthly, annually. And then I add a bucket list to it so that, you know, those of us who don't get 6 month sabbaticals like professors or pastors, certain other professionals can pull something off our bucket list into our annual vacation every 3 to 5 years, because we might have to save for it, build up to it, plan for it. But we're not waiting until we're 65. Okay, now we can jump in the RV and travel the country and tick off bucket list items, because we don't know if we're going to make it to 65. We don't know how far past 65 we're going to make it. So, so when I start helping people structure their lives so that the chaos of life, and there's chaos out there. That's why I tell college kids, stay in the womb as long as you can, because it's a crazy world out there. but we want to teach people how to impose their will of intention on the chaos of their lives at the margins.
Right.
You know, it's what gets squeezed out of us in work and emotional drama, intellectual engagements and pursuits. And how do we guard ourselves and structure into our lives the things that we need daily, weekly, monthly, and annually? So daily, I focus on, you know, certain things that I need. And I have daily reminders, read scripture, like especially a pastor, but every Christian, if you're literate, and even now the Bible can be read to you, you know, in audio.
Right.
Even if you're literate, you can, or especially if you're literate, you can read the Bible every day for yourself and be nourished by the Word of God. Pastors have no excuse not to do that daily.
Right.
It's where strength comes from, because the scriptures are the reliquary of the Holy Spirit. And then I also have a reminder to pray for each member of my family, my wife, my kids. And those reminders keep popping up until I do it. And it's annoying, but
I'm so glad someone else does it. I have it in my phone. Pray for Alex. I'm like, and then sometimes I look at it. I'm like, okay, I'm right in the middle of something, but Father, please bless Alex. There's my prayer.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But we tend to not spend a sufficient amount of time. Like if we knew we were going to into battle the next day, and we knew we needed to take in food and water, prehydrate, so that we don't just automatically exhaust ourselves in the first few sword swings.
Right.
You know, we would do that. We would do whatever was necessary. And this is where strength comes from. What we do with the margins of our life left over by work, like sleep, is a big deal. You know, get sufficient sleep. And when we're working on a particular project, sure, we'll blow past the stop sign and the stoplight of our bodies telling us it's time to quit. It's time to, right. You know, there are times where you have to go beyond the mental and physical boundaries to accomplish something. And we put those stresses on our Rangers and our special operations communities, all our soldiers, but there's extra pressures. But it shouldn't be done in such an unsustainable way that we're ruining the weapon, primary weapon system. And right. There's a war on. It's a spiritual war. We've got to be moving toward the chaos, you know, gaining peace through the strength that we gain by daily consuming the things that we need for strength.
Right.
And man can't live by bread alone, but has to subsist with, in soul, with the Word of God. So there's other daily things that are obvious to our workout-obsessed culture, where you know, we've got to, you know, a lot of us are doing it for all the wrong reasons, because the AI generated female on the cover of Cosmo is making every woman feel like she's not good enough.
Right. You know?
And so some people are driven for the wrong reasons into physical exercise, but physical exercise releases endorphins into your body, makes you less susceptible to disease and viral infections. And, you know, we know all this because our culture is obsessed with it.
Right.
We have the tree of staying young. And so there's, we go beyond the healthy into the nip, the tuck, the
exactly
abnormal.
That's right. And I'm not sure what I'd be interested to know, and I think I'll study this. I'll look it up while you're talking, but I'd be interested to know what the European trends are with relation to exercise studios, whatnot. You know, whenever I've traveled to Europe, they do abound, but I don't think the term obsession, I think, is accurate. I'm not sure that the obsession is necessarily there. Different cultures, maybe, but Europeans tend to spend an inordinate, comparatively to us, amount of time outdoors. They walk a lot more than
they do. They walk everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like they have little townships that are ancient hamlets. And we're trying to do some of that where you see these townships going up,
right,
around major cities where you have, you know, socioeconomic housing diversity and restaurants and businesses can all move in. And so we're kind of trying to recover some things that have been lost in suburban sprawl.
Right.
But, you know, they walk everywhere. We drive everywhere.
Sure.
Had an African friend come over from Rwanda, and, you know, our culture was just bizarre. Driving down the road, he was like, where are all the people? Because they walk everywhere. Right. And if you're still in an agrarian society, you're working outside, you're walking everywhere. The last thing you want to do after working outside and walking everywhere is go to a windowless workout space,
right,
and jump on a treadmill. But those of us who do the kinds of jobs that are common in the U.S., from air conditioned blue collar to white collar workspaces, we just don't have that level of physical demand or variety of physical demand, and so we're just not healthy.
Agreed. And I think, so according to Bloomberg, not the biggest fan of Bloomberg, but I will quote it for these purposes. Wellness. Okay. Interesting distinction to make too, I think, between healthcare, which is, you know, it's funny that we call it healthcare, right? And we always confuse healthcare with insurance. And, you know, what is healthcare? Okay. I think if we spent more time and more money in the quote wellness sector of life, and mitigating it, which is what we're talking about today, you know, through caring for the entire person holistically, as a whole being, I think we would not continue to see as many altars erect. You know, in my city, in our state, there's no less than probably 100 cranes on any given day putting up new medical facilities. And every time I see them go up, and listen, I'm not like a Christian Science person, okay? So I'm not down on medicine, but I do think that that when it comes to, you know, our affinity for pharmakia, which is not a positive term scripturally, by the way, when it comes to our addiction, to our absolute reliance upon and worship of pharmakia, to me, it's an indictment on exactly where our trust is. I see them as altars that go up all over the country. That's just me. And again, not to say that medicine, that God doesn't work through medicine, because I firmly believe that he does. But I think we've become reliant on it to the point where we no longer look to him to be the great physician. And most people wouldn't even know that he says he's the great physician, because they don't read their Bibles. And to that end, wellness is a $5.6 trillion revenue system as of 2022. And that's globally. $5.6 trillion. And that's according to the Global Wellness Institute. So that's interesting that between med spas and retreats and respite facilities, which, as you know, I am in the process of seeking out land now for that exact purpose, for a wellness slash respite and training facility for men and women, primarily leaders, whether it's government, ministry, and or the private sector. But for this exact reason, to really pour into people and, you know, and give them a place of restoration and recreation. I think, too, something I did a couple years ago is I divided up my day in percentages, and I decided to give, you know, 10% of my morning. It was like a tithing thing for me. So I was going to give 10% of my waking hours. The first waking hours, my first 10% was dedicated to study of the word and prayer, meditation upon the word. The next 10% was, who could I help? Who could I find that needed help, that I could, whether it's making a connection for someone in business, you know, it's helping them with messaging. It's helping them get out a story that they want released. But who can I help? So it went from father to help, you know, to others. And then I got on with my day and divvied it up accordingly. You know, where I fall off is the discipline. Man, full disclosure, the discipline is literally the hardest part for me. It is the only reason that I would actually deliberately sign up for the military right now. To like have somebody kick my butt into becoming a little bit more disciplined. And I think that's the hardest part. I think that's the thing I admire about soldiers the most, is that they are, because they have to be, or you get your butt kicked, but they tend to be disciplined individuals. And there's a lot to be said for that. So anyway, $5.6 trillion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the discipline comes through, you know, stopping long enough to plan. And a lot of us just don't stop to plan. You know, we don't think of the why of what we're doing. So, right. For instance, I would have a soldier come in for counseling, and it would be about something tactical. Should I do this or should I do that? But there's no strategic trajectory to measure it against.
Got it.
And so I started using something that I had used for church growth, a sort of paradigm or model that I'd used for church growth, where you come up with a mission statement, values, and vision. And because I can help somebody make a tactical decision, you know, should I do this or that, but it's not going to solve the problem. Just like Western medicine, so often aims at medicating the symptoms instead of dealing with the actual problem.
That's right.
And that's what a whole lot of businesses are making money off, whether they put the wellness shingle out or not,
right.
Or the mindfulness shingle out or not. You know, they're making a whole lot of money off the people who have these needs with solutions that aren't going to work, or that are superficial and don't deal with the, you know, the deep tissue massage of the soul that they need.
Right.
So what I would tell soldiers is like, okay, I'm going to help you make this tactical decision, but we have to, you know, dig a little deeper and find out what your strategic goals are for your life, you know. What is the big why?
Right.
You know, why do you stay in the Army? Why would you leave? Why would you leave the Army? Why would you wait till you left the Army to start a family? Why would you not? You know, you have to have some sort of governing why. And not everybody I talked to was a person of faith, obviously, mm-hmm. but sure. I was their chaplain. So I was just like, look, and this is bad theology, so plug your ears for a second and don't judge me. But I'd just be like, look, I can save your life, and I'm not the Messiah for all you listeners out there. I recognize I'm not the Messiah. I can save your life with one sheet of paper, two blank sides. And I draw a football field on one side and just say, the mission is the end zones. The values are the boundaries, the sidelines. And vision is something you come up with every 3 to 5 years within the playing field. It's your X's and O's. It's your assets versus the obstacles. And so if, you know, they'd tell me their goals, and this isn't just goal setting, this is a complete life redesign. I would call it designing the life you'd prefer to be living. And how to, it's how to get there from wherever here is. Because wherever you are, there you are. And there's a not terribly funny Irish parable about a guy driving around the countryside in Ireland, getting lost, and then asking a shepherd, rolling down his window, asking a shepherd with a flock of sheep, "Hey, how do I get to Dublin from here?" And the shepherd's response is, "Well, if you're going to Dublin, I wouldn't start from here." but the problem is, you know, wherever you are, there you are. And and how to of getting out of the pit you may have dug for yourself.
Right.
You know, this life coaching arena has emerged where people just come alongside and help you work through. It's something I do, not as a profession, but just on the side. So once you
and,
mission,
and wouldn't we call that discipleship?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Right?
I mean, back in the day during the Jesus movement, when my parents came to faith, you know, there was a woman who knocked on the door who said, "The Lord has, you know, told me to come live with you and disciple you."
Wow.
Where is that these days? Because right. Now discipleship has been reduced to, I listened to a podcast and had great feels about who Jesus is.
Right.
But, you know, in terms of the accountability of what life on life, messy, small group accountability, where are we going together on this journey of movement toward the likeness of the family likeness of the household of God, so that our behavior changes because of how we've designed our lives. Most of us are in a rut. And the word rut, you know, comes from the ruts of people going west and the wagon ruts. You know, so many people went west that it was like if you got outside the ruts, you'd break your wheel.
Right.
It's hard to get out of your ruts. And so when pressure comes, you run straight back to all the coping mechanisms that that don't really work, but are your go-tos.
That's right.
And, you know, destructive habits. And so when you get squeezed, the question is, you know, whatever you've been putting in is what comes out. And that can smell really bad.
Yes. For some of us, it's not the aroma of Christ. Right?
No. There's a line in a song I wrote when I was a singer-songwriter. I was like a geyser, it comes through layers that come undone, swelling up to the top. And then there's a line, you know, "Can you smell that? Hey, that's my soul."
I think I just died a little bit. Go ahead.
So we come.
Let's
up
get back to the football analogy because I really like that. That works for me. The X's and O's, I love that. Yeah, I love what you said. The values are the sidelines. That's good.
Come up with a mission statement.
Okay.
And mine is just, you know, I would tell soldiers, look, you don't have to be a person of faith. I'm just telling you what mine is so that you get a point of reference.
That's good.
And I don't do whole weekend retreats on this. I'd be like, mine is love God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love my neighbor as though neighbor were self. And that's what a self has been given to me to steward for.
Right.
And, you know, theirs would be varied, but it's a short statement and it doesn't change much over time. It's the end zones to set an azimuth when you're doing orienteering or land navigation. You have to have 2 points on the map. And so your points on the map are the end zones. The mission is where you start, how you aim, and where you want to be when you're looking over your shoulder in the old folks home about the investment you've made with the talents, time, talents, and treasures you've been given. So the values are, you know, more general things like, you know, I want to be a generous person. I don't want to just be a self-focused narcissist. I want to, you know, live a life that looks like the Book of Revelation. So, you know, my friends are going to look multiracial, not because I'm trying to get quotas, but just because it's how I plant myself. Mm-hmm. And I'm against racism. I think we're all part of the human race, and racism is stupid. So that's the kind of values you're going to have. You're not going to play outside those lines.
Right.
And then, you know, loyalty to family, you know, there's various other things you can put as the boundaries, you know, staying true to your baptismal covenant, you know, at least aiming at it, mm-hmm. where I can say, I haven't been perfect, but I think my aim has been pretty true for mm-hmm. the last 28 years. So then, the X's and O's, you know, if I'm talking to a soldier, just for an example, they might want to finish their bachelor's degree or finish their master's degree while they're in the Army. Well, to do that, they're going to have to create time margins. Mm-hmm. And so once you have your mission values and your vision is something you re-envision every 3 to 5 years and you evaluate every year, it's something that changes. It's not fixed. It's okay. Now that I have my bachelor's degree, I want to become a homeowner. How do I do that? Mm-hmm. You know, if a certain party gets elected, you know, I want to invest in gold. as you've mentioned, mm-hmm. and I wish I had listened to you because I just saw gold prices.
Yeah.
yeah. They're pretty good. Since we've met.
Wow. Yeah. Not surprised.
So anyway, once you have that established, you flip the sheet of paper over. That's just one side of the sheet of paper. Flip the sheet of paper over, and now you draw lines for columns for daily, mm-hmm. weekly, monthly, annually, and bucket lists. And so daily, what do you need to rejuvenate, to refresh yourself? You got to create a time margin for that. If it's working out, it's working out. If you're like me and you're like, I'm going to join the Y, which I did like 3 years ago. And I've been twice because exactly. I lack discipline in certain right, areas of right. my life. If you roll out a soccer ball and make it a competition, I'll literally lose my life with another TBI. Because I have discipline if you roll the ball out. But if it's just like, you know, yeah. swimming, or which is about all I can do, is jazzercise in the pool with the old ladies after all my surgeries. Mm-hmm. But what are you doing daily to not only mentally check out, but to recreate? You right. got to build it into the rhythm of your daily life so that when work requires extra from you, you have extra to give. So you can move toward the chaos to create a peace through strength. Mm-hmm. And then weekly, you got to Sabbath. You got to take 24 hours physically off, and you got to take 24 hours mentally, emotionally off. And because we get 2 days on weekends, which St. Paul never got, I'm sure he Sabbathed hard, but he worked really hard. But over the course of a weekend, you know, it's 48 hours. Within those 48 hours, we should be able to create time margins for rest from work. You know, don't bring it home. Mm-hmm. Don't tell her outside the lines of these boundaries. But, you know, if you have extenuating circumstances, don't be legalistic and beat yourself up. Sure. It's based on an individual rule of life with the monastic communities, monks, as a point of reference. So you're adding worship to your daily life, you're adding scripture to your daily life, and you're adding hard work to your daily life, just like a monastic community does. And you're weaving your faith with the rest of your life. It's not supposed to be, you know, everything that happens on a church property is spiritual and the rest of the week is secular. Like, it's all one act of worship, one posture, living your life in a posture of worship is what I call it. And you're, if you're a Christian, you're re-sacralizing desecrated spaces as a priest in mm-hmm. God's temple palace, the cosmos, mm-hmm. the universe, his creation. And it is his temple palace. It belongs to him. So if somebody has desecrated a space or tried to, you know, create some religion-free zone, safe space for themselves, you say, well, no, actually, that's not what the First Amendment meant. It meant that I could come into your safe space mm-hmm. and freely share my opinion right. on the subject of who God is and how he loves. The other thing you can build into weekly, not just worship, you know, weekly worship attendance, but like family game night, if you have kids or grandkids, or then you move to monthly, you could have a date night, move to monthly, and it's going to be things like every month I want to have one Sabbath where I get out of Dodge just to get perspective, you know, be away from my house and the normal patterns of life, the normal demands, because then I'll just get into ruts. I want to go see a state park I haven't seen or a national park I haven't seen that's nearby within, you know, 250-mile radius or whatever.
Right.
Stay in a hotel I've never stayed in. It doesn't have to cost money so that it's accessible to every socioeconomic category. You know, you see a lot of undocumented immigrants enjoying our parks more than we do.
Correct.
Because it's a part of the rhythm of their lives in their countries of origin. But there are lakes, like you said, lakes and parks mm-hmm. within striking distance. And it's just to get away, do something new. Learn something new, go to a museum, just right. once a month, one of your Sabbath rest days, go get out of Dodge. One thing we talked about offline is that introverts and extroverts get their energy from different places. Mm-hmm. So introverts get their energy, recharge their batteries by being away from people. Like my wife, is a very sociable person, and you've met her, but she's also a high school teacher, so she's blowing out all her energy during the week, mm-hmm. and then on the weekend, I'm an extrovert. I get my energy from being around people. If I'm like, hey, let's have a 40-person party, and she's doing the math of, like, we got to clean the house, we got to do the shopping list, you know, it puts all this pressure on her, so I have to think about how she recharges her batteries. And when the kids were little, you know, they were crawling all over her most of the day. And so Friday sundown to Saturday sundown, I would have to say, hey, the kids are on me.
Right.
And you can't judge me for keeping them alive with Cheetos and pizza.
Right.
And, you know, old Disney movies, because new Disney, what a thing that is.
Yeah, no kidding.
But I'm helping her with her rule of life because we're a couple. And, sure. you know, I have to sacrifice sometimes to do the things that give her life, and she has to sacrifice to do the things that give me life. And, you know, what gives me life is having people over all the time. Our house is your house kind of thing.
Right.
And that wears her out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I certainly didn't feel that way as your house guest, but I'm also, I don't pride myself in this, but I'm the house guest everyone wants. Okay. Because I probably get this from like this very traumatic childhood that I had where I just try to stay out of everybody's way, but I'm very sensitive to people, to space, to people's space, and I'm sensitive to others, and I can pick up on when someone maybe just wants to be left alone in their own living room. And just because I'm your guest doesn't mean you have to entertain me the entire time I'm there. Matter of fact, I would prefer you don't. You know, right. You know what I mean? I'd be perfectly happy helping you clean, staying out of your way, whatever. And then for the times that we have together, you know, then we're together. But it's one of the reasons why I plan our family vacations the way I do, in that I always make sure we all have enough space. Okay. Everyone has enough little nooks and crannies to disappear into, whether it's on the top floor, a bottom floor, it's on a porch. You can walk down to the beach, you can go to the pool, but excuse my language, but you can just get the hell out of my space. Okay. And I can get out of yours. Right. And then we can all congregate, and we plan those times when we're going to have dinner, who's making breakfast. You know, we delegate and we play games and we have a good time, but ultimately you have to strategize, or sometimes you do, in order to get to the relaxation. And for somewhere my daughter and I, you know, I may have mentioned in previous broadcast that I'm a widow of 25 years. So I raised my daughter on my own. Thank God we had a lot of awesome people that helped us along the way, but we did everything together and we traveled a lot. My daughter will tell you we were literally the richest, the wealthiest poor people you would ever meet. So because Father really did bless us with favor upon favor upon favor, whether it was vacations, it was friends with money who were just like, hey, go enjoy our home. They would invite us on their vacations. You know, people were just very gracious where we were concerned. And so when we would take a vacation, you know, I was in this trap of, well, we got to get there, right? And so everything from the time you start packing, now I have adopted this, and hopefully this is going to bless some of you. I've adopted this method, and really as a mindset, where instead of being a jackleg the whole way to the vacation because the GPS is screwed up or the car's running on hot or traffic is hell, you know, she's hungry again, we have to have another pee stop, it's taking us forever to get there. So by the time you get to vacation, you're so frazzled that you feel like you need another vacation. So, but now I'm like, all right, we're going to strategize this. And from the minute my feet hit the ground that morning, I'm on vacation. Every moment of that day getting to our destination is all part of the journey. And so that has helped mitigate some of the stress that goes along, that ultimately sometimes people are like, you know what? Vacationing with my family is just not fun. My wife turns into a neo-Nazi of time management. The kids are crazy, you know, whatever. And some dudes and some women are just like, you know, he's on his phone the whole time. And give yourself a day at least to decompress into your new environment, right? Like just, and give yourself, well, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's crazy what we do to ourselves. You know, first of all, the root word of vacation is vacate. So on the one hand, you're vacating where you live, but you're supposed to be vacant. Like,
right.
You'd sign on your brain that says no vacancy, because like you're full of, you know, whatever crap you've had to put up with. And now it's time to, as you say, to decompress, to allow it to come off of you. And that could take a couple of days.
It usually does, honestly.
Days of doing nothing. Don't overschedule. And I would tell, when I was giving this class to soldiers, young soldiers, newlyweds, kind of couples, what they called strong bonds events at the time, building strong bonds. Mm-hmm. And I would tell them this, like, do not spend all of your leave every year with your in-laws. Mm-hmm. But people do that. They feel obligated, like, right. Well, we got to go home to my family for Thanksgiving, your family for Christmas. And they just sort of divvy up all their vacation time, you know, sharing it with family. And that can be really stressful if your only time to decompress and rejuvenate, you know, you go to the beach and instead of ever seeing the beach, you're like playing mini golf with your in-laws. Like,
right.
Just stop it.
Well, and some people need constant entertainment. I have family members who they will suck every single ounce of anything you have out of you. And so they don't know how to entertain themselves. Right. And so, and I'm always the frigging cruise director, and there's only so much of the Julie that I'm going to play on any given vacation. And listen, I was raised by parents who, even on vacation, it was, what are you doing? Why are you doing it? We're going to have lunch at this time. We're going to have dinner at that time. Everything was very strategically placed. Even your fun time, you know, it was, someone was monitoring it. And so as an adult, I pretty much rebel against that, where I'm with my kids, where I'm like, hey, you guys go, if you want to hang out on the third floor in the little hammock and you two be romantic and, you know, get your marriage stuff, you know, worked out and all that, go for it. We don't have to be together the whole time, and I don't want to be. But some people really do have those family members who they'll sulk, or they feel left out, or, you know, nobody wants me around. It's like, no. We're not here to minister to your devils on our trip. We are, have a cocktail. Here, Mom. Here, Grandma. Like, here's an umbrella and a pineapple and some bourbon or whatever, rum. I'll meet you at the pool, okay? Or go hang out at the pool. Do your thing. But yeah, every family dynamic is different. But listen, I want to touch on something really important, okay? Along your time management thing, this is so classic. Here's Tony Robbins. You ready? Here's one of his famous quotes. This goes along with what you're saying about the football stuff in the end zone. Once you have mastered time, you will understand how true it is that most people overestimate what they can accomplish in a year and underestimate what they can achieve in a decade. And I want to take a moment and really speak to that, okay? Because I know a lot of my listeners and yours who have also joined us, many people have suffered loss and for like great losses. And for me, I lost my husband at 28. I buried him at 28 of ALS, and it was tragic. It was very disorienting. It was awful. As you can imagine, he was only 33 when he died. Okay. What that did to my psyche is something that I have had to continue to undo for the past 25 years. We're coming up on his 25th anniversary of death. And what it did was it made me no longer want to delay any form of gratification because I saw how fleeting life was. And so the discipline went out the window, planning went out the window. It was living by, for the moment, by the seat of my pants. Yes, even with a child, which was easy to do because she was homeschooled. So wherever I wanted to go, I'd pack her up, take her with me, and it was a learning experience. And she turned out perfectly fine, probably more than fine academically, really. That's like the beast I'm dealing with now. but she's very, very bright and was very well-rounded as a child. Homeschooling, highly recommend it to you guys. However, if I could do it, you can definitely do it. But because they learn in spite of us is what her kindergarten teacher taught me, and that's absolutely true. But what I realized was that there was such a disappointment that gained a stronghold, gained a foothold in my life, that you telling me to sit down and plan something, I literally, Chris, could not do it because I didn't trust that anything would be here 6 months from now, a year from now, much less 10 years from now. So to me, it was like, you should go ahead and make all of your memories as fast as you can. Like, I lived with my butt on fire, is my hair on fire, is what I tell people. So I was like gobbling up life as much as I could because I was running from that death. And I think sometimes when we have traumatic moments, you can get stuck in that cycle of you no longer value time in the same way because you realize just how fleeting it is. And so you don't trust that you even have the time. And as the days grow darker, you know, in the world, and the church is constantly beating the drum of revelation, it's all coming to an end. Jesus is coming back to hell with everybody else. We can't wait for him to come and wipe out all these bad, weird people. All this craziness that the church subscribes to, it doesn't lend itself to discipline, which is to disciple. The root of disciple is discipline. And so we don't disciple each other. We don't allow ourselves to be discipled, which I think is what lends itself to not having discipline. And on that final thought, I want you to tap into this. You know, Jim, Pastor Baker says we are most vulnerable after a disappointment, most spiritually vulnerable, which is going to affect our ability to make wise decisions it's going to lead us right down that path of self-soothing, self-comforting, all the addictions that you speak of. And he says, we can easily go into self, other, and God accusation when someone dies, when they leave us, when our marriages break up, there's a job loss, a health crisis, or betrayal. And too many disappointments can land you in addiction territory. And not all addictions appear to be sinister. For some people, particularly high-functioning people in C-suites, this is where they work harder, they travel more, they try to crush the numbers, their profits far outweigh their losses, you know, they just become overdrive, overachievers. And so, you know, what are your thoughts on that? Because that's my own personal battle space, but I know there are many people who have suffered loss who get stuck. I can't even imagine being a soldier and watching your best friend, your buddy, who you've gone through hell and back with, get blown into a million pieces standing next to you. And somehow you're supposed to come back, and now you're supposed to color in between the lines. You know, I don't know how, that's how I felt when my husband died. And so it's been a life, I'm not, full transparency, it's been a lifelong challenge for me to value the time and that I have it. And not living in fear that I'm actually, it's going to slip through my fingers. Does that make sense?
Sure. And what are we to do now? You know, like the disciples saw Jesus crucified and they were like, what are we to do now? You know, we see sin and evil and darkness in the world, and it's kind of like, what are we to do now? And the ironic or paradoxical thing is, I think we're supposed to be the people of the kingdom in contradistinction to the people who are scurrying around being worldly about their response to what has happened.
Right.
It's totally understandable, but it is not going to change the darkness by fighting darkness with darkness.
Sure.
You know, the question is, how can we be light? And it's an understandable reaction to grief and loss, to draw wrong conclusions from right information. Because we all do that, you know. Well, if that's the way I'm going to get treated, then I'm going to create defenses that nobody else is going to ever be able to hurt me, is kind of the thing, mm-hmm. our reaction to it. And so mm-hmm. we build these walls where God has made us for relationships, and we're isolating ourselves. And so that isolation makes us predator or prey, more susceptible to being predator or prey. And that isolation causes us to, you know, be more susceptible to suicide and not having help with the mitigation of whatever woundedness or hurts that we've experienced. And so, you know, coming to the places that where we really get healing and wholeness, you know, getting stuck in one of the stages of grief is exactly what happens to people who've mm-hmm. experienced tremendous grief. And you can get stuck in one of the stages for days or months or even years. Mm-hmm. We need help with that.
Right.
Usually it's going to require that we have somebody else in our life who pulls us out of the pit.
Right. Yeah. And I think it requires hope. I think it requires right. hope. And the scariest thing in the world for most people to do that I think really does lead people to burnout is to hope. And people will say, especially in business, hope is not a strategy, Monica. And I'm like, well, here's the thing. As a Christian, if I worship the God of hope, then he is a strategy in every area of life, whether that's business, well, you know, that is in your family. Hope is a strategy, but hope also has, you know, planning. I understand that it has discipline that goes along with it. I get that.
Hope, you know, has an ethereal quality to it,
sure.
You know, like, well, what are you talking about exactly?
But it also has a very practical aspect to it.
Where do we get our hope? And so, you know, a couple would come in with their, I'm right, she's wrong, or vice versa. And, you know, they were fighting about something. So they'd come see the chaplain. And instead of jumping into the fray, I would say, how did y'all meet? And I would ask about the backstory. I would see the twinkle come back. Because they were talking about something other than the immediate nonsense. And that's where you get hope from, is having a vision that's larger than the moment. You have a vision of a future, of a preferred future emerging, which is hard to see in the wake of tremendous grief. But if you have a hope in a future, you can plan. And you'll have discipline to plan because you're excited about the potential emergence of this preferred future.
Right.
And so this life redesign, this concept of designing the life you'd prefer to be living, is driven by the engine of hope in a preferred future. So I'd ask people, tell me about your preferred future. You know,
excellent.
They'd be depressed, you know, maybe even suicidal. Having suicidal ideations, and I'd say, you know, what would a preferred future look like? And then they start talking about the things they're excited about, the things they've been created by their creator to be interested in. And, you know, we can plan how to build an infrastructure for that to emerge. And if people want to go to, ChrisCairns.com, my second article on burnout, there, that's ChrisCairns.com. And there's a description in the burnout mitigation article of sort of the teaching I do on this. But I recommend that people get really specific. Mm-hmm. You know, each thing you put down in your daily column might have three subpoints, like reading scripture. Okay, what do I need to do to make this happen? I need to find a place where nobody's going to bother me. I got to find a place. I got to find a time where there's not going to be anybody busting through the door and demanding my attention. Mm-hmm. And that can take discipline. Like, I gotta go to bed, I gotta stop doom scrolling Instagram till 10 p.m and, you know, fall asleep so that I can get up before everybody else does and spend some time with the Lord. I gotta, if we're a couple, I gotta communicate with the other member of the team and say, how are we going to build a rhythm of life where I can support you pursuing everything God is calling you to be, and vice versa? And when I did this with my employees, when I was on staff, I was the senior pastor of the church, so I could do whatever I wanted. I'm kidding. But I would ask people, like, hey, if I were to give you, you know, one Tuesday a month off, if I just give it back to you, what would you do with it?
Right.
And they say, well, I really like to read and write poetry, and that really rejuvenates me, but I never have time for it. I'd be like, I'll give you a Tuesday back if that's what you'll do. Mm-hmm. And I'll keep you accountable to that. Because what's the first thing that gets crowded out of our lives when we start getting busy with we're a suburban family, we're a suburban couple with 3.7 children and 6.2 activities apiece on average in America. And the logistics are crazy. And how do I find rest? Mm-hmm. Which we'll talk about if there's a fourth podcast. Mm-hmm.
That'll be next week.
We'll talk about, how do we lift ourselves out of the pit of deep stage burnout But how do I find rest in the midst of all of this swirling chaos? Well, the first thing that gets crowded out of our lives, the very things that would refresh our soul to give us the strength to subsist, mm-hmm. we crowd those things out. You know, the things that we just don't have time for anymore. Those are the things, the very things that need to be in the margins of our lives left over by work. And I told my soldiers, I get it. Every time you give the army an inch, they'll take a mile of your margins. Mm-hmm. And you need to push back, especially if you're a senior leader in your company or in your unit. If you're in the military, you need to lead up the chain of command one step up and say, hey, it's time to send these people home. Mm-hmm. If you really want production and produce out of them, you'll send them home now so they'll come back to you refreshed and ready to go. You actually get more production out of your people by thinking of this. How do I care for the primary weapon system of my company so that I'm setting them up to succeed, to be the best they can be?
That's good.
And we'll have ownership of the mission.
Right.
Because if I'm a great boss and I care for them, and I, you know, keep them from the laziness that comes with a lack of discipline, but I also keep them from the overuse as if they're just a commodity to be used up and spit out. Like, there's this in-between way of leading, which isn't always comfortable for the people we're leading. And it's kind of like a good pastor is, you know, the word pastor comes from pastoral, like a shepherd, the word mm-hmm. for pasture. And somebody who is a good leader doesn't just leave the sheep in one pasture so that they eat all the grass, get fat, and die in place. There's going to be movement and a trajectory, but that leader is not going to beat the sheep to the point of starvation and death by going too fast, you know, too far, sure. too fast for too long. So a good shepherd, you know, has to thump the sheep if they aren't coming to the next pasture. And uh-huh. so there's this sense of coming together as a flock and there, or a team, and in a trajectory, what's the mission? Uh-huh. And if you lack either as a church or as an organization, your people aren't going to get excited about the kind of bad leadership where, you know, if you're beating the sheep too far, too fast for too long, they're going to feel it. They're sure. not going to like it.
Sure.
But you also can't just leave them to their own devices.
Right.
So like, you and I have areas of discipline in our lives where we can help each other out. And you can just be like, hey, Cairns, write this thing by this date, this time. I want to see it. You
know? Yeah.
Because otherwise it's just like, well, I think I might be called to being a writer.
Well, I'm like that even in my fellowship, right? So I lead a fellowship online every Monday. We get together for our study time. But really, it's fellowship. It's we care about each other. We get together, you know, offline as well. And there are some folks who are, you know, we go over the vision that God's given people. You know, what is your vision? Without vision, the people perish. Okay, well, I feel like God's telling me this. Okay, well, a year later, okay, you're still telling us in the group that, well, when I come back around and say, okay, well, what steps have you taken to get into position, right? Has the plan changed? Did God tell you something different? Or are you not hearing because you haven't moved on the first thing that you know you heard to do, right? And so a year later, you know, I a little bit of a, not a drill sergeant doesn't come out of me, but again, that comes back to that practical, very no nonsensical person where it's like, okay, listen, which is why, yes, I'm going to say, what have you done to start on your book? How many pages have you typed today? Because I've had to do it. I've done that discipline of writing a book, and it does require discipline. And it requires, yes. And I did it with the Holy Spirit. No one else had their foot on my butt. Like, I did it with him, so he gets all the glory. But I do realize that it does require dedication, even if it's an hour a day, and every obstacle, every objection in the world in your mind is going to come out to tell you, you don't have time, you have energy, I'd rather doom scroll, whatever, the kids need me, the church is having political issue, whatever, the dog's got to go out, you name it, there will always be something to get in the way. But I told this one guy recently, listen, we're not going to have this conversation with you anymore, and don't ask me to pray about it. Because you've already been given the answer, and you have not made the first step, and you've given me about five excuses as to why you're still in the same position. And those are excuses. And if this seems harsh to anyone else in this group, believe me when I tell you, I fully expect you all to hold me to the same standard. So if you know that I have been called to something, or I'm supposed to make a move on something, and 6 months later, I'm still asking for prayer on this thing, then you all need to put a foot in my butt and tell me, remind me of what I've already, my feelings won't be hurt. I need a little bit of a coach that's like, hey, what are you doing? And lo and behold, the minute this dude moved, and he did, he made a very huge move. We saw all kinds of things open up. Now, granted, yeah, he's walking one foot, you know, in front of the other, not really with a whole lot of direction other than what's getting worked out in him are the things that is the, we see the dross coming up to the surface that needs to be removed anyway. And so that's what this mm-hmm. time has allotted for. And he is going to become the man that he knows is in there. It's like whenever I coach people in voice training and on camera training, and or media training in general, what you see with singers, and I went through this, so I know from experience, and I'm Grammy nominated as a singer, that this is a phenomenon that many people contend with. You hear someone's voice, and you hear, and this can be true for any of you, whether you're still serving in the military, you've got a family, you have a voice. Everyone has a voice. The mother who's at home all day, she has a voice. She should actually probably has the loudest voice, but everyone has a voice. And so when people say to me, oh, you're our voice, Monica, I'm like, no, do not assign that value to me. I have a bigger microphone than you, but I don't want to be your voice. That's lazy. That's BS. You have your own voice. But what you find with singers and creators is that many times the reason why they haven't, they have a good voice. They make people happy. They can give you the chills, but it's not their biggest voice. It's not their mature voice. And what you find is that all of the internal objections, all of the internal insecurities, the struggles, the PTSD, the trauma, whatever they've gone through, it all suffocates the voice. It all has an effect on the voice, and people are only good at wearing a mask for so long. And I know that very well. I showed up at my radio station for months, and even a year after, you know, getting on Herman's, I filled in for Herman Cain pretty consistently. So that was a really big deal after only being on the air for 2 months as a newbie. But my station believed in me, and they gave me the bandwidth, no pun intended, to be able to pull that off. But what I realized is just, oh my gosh, you guys, I struggled constantly with this imposter syndrome where I was like, I don't know enough about politics. I didn't graduate from college. I'm not a dude. You know, I'm like the only female in my station at the time talking about politics and geopolitics and Christianity and all this stuff. And so that wears on you. It takes a toll where you're just like, okay, I feel like an imposter. But what came out of that crucible, and it was a crucible for years, every time I would get on the air, I would struggle with that, is now it is not my second nature to be able to hold a conversation with confidence. And I don't have to know squat about the subject matter because I'm perfectly comfortable telling you I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. But that's why I have you on. That's why I have really smart guests on my shows, because I don't want to be the smartest person in the room, and I don't have to be. But what I am capable of doing is using my full voice. And when you step into that and you deal with those devils, and you deal with the trauma, and you deal with the things that have always made you feel insecure, and you deal with the disappointments, and you take them to the cross, You talk them over like I talk them over with you. I talk them over with other elders and people I respect in the faith and even outside of the faith, business elders. You know, what you find is your voice. And what comes out of you is vastly different from it's the voice that you can make money on that voice. It's a little bit diminished. It's a little bit lazy, or it's a little bit tingy. You've got this decibel to your voice that's, we could never figure that out when I first started in radio. What I hated about a particular change in my voice would occur when I didn't know what the hell I was talking about. And I could hear it because I'm insecure. I'm uncomfortable about the subject matter. So I would talk faster. I would say a lot. You'll notice I don't say that a lot on my show. Very rarely do I use the word which is really a linguistic crutch. And so it really comes from, okay, I'm going to slow down. I don't have to be the best. This is my voice. And if this is my highest level of ignorance on this subject matter for right now, okay. I mean, what's the worst that my audience can do? Just not listen. They can turn the channel. I can be fired. But I wasn't. And they didn't turn the channel. And they had grace for me to grow. And so in that, I just think finding your voice, you know, and holding people accountable to, you know, hey man, if you want to become the best and the fullest that you can be, not because you're competing with everyone else, you got to get to your voice. And in order to get there, you have to, you know, you got to go through the crucible of dealing with those things that have tried to take your complete voice. I want to play something before we close. Speaking of doom scrolling, which I do not do on my IG, I call it Insta Scam. It's so great. I buy way too much off this stupid app, but I'm the sucker. It's like the checkout line for me. But I found this dude this morning. I was scrolling and I loved what he said. And I thought, man, this ties in perfectly with what Chris and I are talking about today. And so I'm going to see if I can get my audio to pull up, but I don't even know who this guy is, but his name will pop up. But I just thought it was very simple advice to move us over into episode 4, which we will bring to you guys next week. But check this out. Let me see if it'll come up.
What is your best self-improvement advice for people out there?
Structure. I was in a situation one time and I was working with this man and his name was Hoss, of all names. And I was talking to Hoss and I was asking his advice. And Hoss said, look, this is what I want you to do. I want you to set your alarm for 8 a.m. Get out of bed, make your bed, be ready to go at whatever you're going to do at 9 a.m., eat lunch at noon, eat dinner at 6, and be ready to go to bed at 9, start getting prepared for bed, and get in bed at 10. And I'm like, that's it? He goes, that's it. And I'm like, why? And he said, because you need to be successful at something. You just need to do one thing and be successful at it. And what will happen is you're going to get bit. You're going to suddenly feel at the end of the first day, you're going to go, wow, I did what I said I was going to do. I did what I set out to do. And really, you didn't do anything except take care of yourself. People need to take care of themselves. Just try a few small baby steps. Because what happens is you get into that New Year's resolution mindset. You know, every day is New Year's resolution. Today's the day. I'm going to stop doing A, B, C, D. I'm going to start doing E, F, G, H. And you get to A, B, and you're done.
Yep.
And now you fail. You feel disappointed. So you turn on Netflix, get a bag of chips, and start all over. Every day is a new day, and every new day is the first day of the rest of your life.
What is your best self-improvement
advice? Amen, honey.
Advisor?
Okay, that is Mark White, a CEO of a publicly held company. So see, InstaScam's not entirely bad, but you know, I follow really cool, positive people over there. And again, my little tiny home porn, I can't help it. And all the RVs, oh my gosh, people are living their best RV life. It is amazing what's happened since COVID. But I'm sure you agree with what Mr. White said, and I thought it was just so simple. And having victories, I want to talk about that next week, how important not only making your own personal and family mission statement, value statement, your own, I call them family constitutions. I call my audience to that every January. Write out your family constitution, revisit it, you know, every few months, sit down with your kids. Where are we in the constitution of our family, right? Your value system's different from family to family. Where are we? And then be able to measure those things. But sometimes when you get stuck, I love that. The self-care is getting up. One thing I do every day, I make my bed. And there are some days where I go, screw it. I'm going to be a 13-year-old girl. And I've got makeup all over my bathroom counter. My room looks retarded. And I've got clothes everywhere and underwear on the floor. And my bed's not made. And I'm good with that because I need those days, too, where I remind myself that I've been disciplined. If I do nothing else all day, I've made my bed. And so that matters. Just those little things matter. So anyway, thank you for obliging me with that, Chris.
Absolutely. As you were talking about finding our voice, I was thinking that the root word of vocation
is voce. Yeah, it's your voice.
Voce. And we believe that God has spoken everything into existence.
So good.
At his word, it has come into being. And that means each of us is given voice by the voice, and adding our voice with a healed heartstring to the symphony in harmony around the melody of our Creator, you know, as an eternal offering, where we uncover that voice, we go pursuing it as a discipline. What did God think he thought he said when he spoke me into existence?
That's good.
Because it may not be what I think I thought I heard. Mm-hmm. And you pursue that identity and then you add your voice. You know, I'm looking at some of my shelves going, there's Schultz and Eatson, and there's a great story in Loving God by Charles Colson about the guy who led Schultz and Eatson to Christ in the Gulag. And I'm looking at Thomas Merton. I'm looking at all these huge names. And they never would have found their voice if they hadn't fought through all the layers of condemnation and you can't do it. Or who do you think you are? Who do you think you are, Thomas Merton? You think you're Thomas Merton? You know, we don't know who we are until we really find what's truest about us from that original voice that spoke us into existence in love and wants to return us to himself. And it says the word of God goes forth like rain and waters the earth, and it accomplishes the purposes for which he sent it out.
So good.
That's what we're here to do, is to be filled to capacity and overflowing with the love of God and the opportunity to participate with him as co-creators in his temple palace, the cosmos. And it's just going to be fun for eternity. So we might as well let eternity break in and break through now, through us in particular.
That's awesome. I love it. That's beautiful. Thank you. All right. Until next week, you'll be back with us and we will seal this thing off. I'm sure we'll have other conversations, but I'm looking forward to giving people, you know, just very practical, like you said today with the football, excuse me, sitting down with the strategy, but there's also just very, you know, team sport like things that you can incorporate, you know, into your family that I think are helpful as well. So looking forward to that. And again, where can people follow you and find you?
I am blowing up my new place on Twitter, which I haven't used much at all over the last 10 years, although I have been on it just to kind of build it up. But I'm Chris DeFerris, Christoferos. So Christoferos, which just means Christopher in Greek, in ancient Greek. And it's funny, when people type my name, I get a lot of emails from other pastors, and they're used to writing sermons. So they'll sign on saying, "Dear Christ." And I'll reply back and say, "Thanks for the promotion, but no thanks. I am not the Messiah."
That's good to know.
And then on Instagram, I'm Chris Cairns 1, the numeral 1. And And then I just started Substack, but I've been such a poorly disciplined writer that I haven't written a thing there yet.
Excellent. So, well, we're going to work that out.
I need you to kick my derriere, yep, as we were talking about.
Yeah, I'm on it. All right, Chris Cairns, thank you so much for being with us. And we will revisit with you next week. You guys, you know where to find me. You can find me on Monica On Air Talk. I am back on Twitter. And right now I'm coming up against, you know, the interesting pharisaical weirdness, apostate weirdness going on regarding Israel. You can follow my commentary there and others. Otherwise, you can hit me up at monicamatthews.com. You can sign up for my newsletters there as well. And I cover everything from politics, religion, finances, you name it. All things that make our souls better in conjunction with walking with the Lord. So have a blessed day. Remember to be good to your neighbor, beginning in your own mirror. And if you're an American, act like one.